As we wrap up January and look back, not a bad month to start the year. For a variety of asset classes, stocks, metals, crypto, you name it, they've all had a solid start to the year. But the big question is, will the comeback continue? And how to play it all? I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Check out their website, senecalcapital.com. That's CENACLE capital.com. Bill, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Andy, great to be with you. It's so much fun talking about everything related to crypto or the market, dividend paying stocks, whatever you want to chat about. They're all really fun things to cover.
Well, and it's been an exciting January for a lot of the areas that you were talking about, crypto. Just to kind of recap, the last time I had you on, we went with the, and we'll start there. We'll start with crypto and then talk markets. The last time we had you on, $1 million Bitcoin forecast. Bitcoin at the time of the taping was about 16,000 and change. Bitcoin, crypto at large, it's had a pretty good start to the beginning of the year. And let's start there, Bill, just your thoughts on crypto and just growth at the beginning of the year here.
Well, it's really interesting. You know, as an investment advisor, I think I can't speak for many other advisors, but I think many also feel the same way I do. And that is, we kind of wait to see what the first month does before we commit to the next 11 months. And so it's very interesting. Today is, you know, the 31st of January, 2023, and we have value as an asset class is up about 9.25%. Growth, which is what I would consider Bitcoin in, as a technology, is up only 2.27% year-to-date. S&P 500 up 4.64. But Bitcoin, year-to-date, just in the last month, is up 38.2%. I find that really interesting that there's this divergence between growth and Bitcoin, right? And so I love divergences. I love paradoxes. We have long-term bonds up 6.79%, metals up 13.3%, the S&P 500 metals and mining ETF. So we're just seeing, I think, a little bit of a rebound here because, Andy, you know as well as I do just how crushed these asset classes were in 2022. I mean, there was not one survivor that I can think of in 2022. Copper, lumber, platinum, gold, corn, soybeans, natural gas, like Bitcoin, Tesla, like everything just got smoked.
But there is a silver lining. As you mentioned, a lot of that stuff that had gotten smoked has come back off of those lows. Not that we're saying it's going to continue from here, but I find it really interesting. You know, you mentioned copper. I mean, copper's turned around. We've talked about how metals, we thought, have kind of lagged throughout all the geopolitical and economic conditions that you would have thought would be ripe for precious metals to go higher. Gold and silver are starting to be on the move as well. And then Bitcoin and crypto. So for as bad as 2022 was, 2023 is starting off on a good note. And again, you know, we've talked about dollar cost averaging here at these lows. You got to think a bulk of the damage has been done, and just getting at these levels is going to be a good thing long term.
Right. And I think, you know, Andy, the older I get, the more I appreciate this concept of balance in the market. So at the end of 2019, things were starting to slow down a little bit, but investors and the industry was very positive on how the market was going to do in 2020. As a matter of fact, in January, Barron's produced a cover article saying, are we going to go to, you know, 38,000 or 39,000 in the Dow, something like that. And what happened? We had COVID, the pandemic, global shutdown, market fell, you know, to the pandemic levels. The low was put in somewhere around March or April of 2020. And it looked like the end of the world was going to happen. Bitcoin got down to about $4,500 a token. Then during the liquidity, flush of liquidity that, you know, globally the markets put into the economy to save things, right, to save the sinking ship, we saw Bitcoin go from 4,500 to 60,000. We saw QQQs in the S&P 500. Incredible rates of return. Bond market up huge. And, you know, from March 2020 until, say, mid to late 2021 and maybe even into mid-2022. And then what happened? We reached the peak. Tesla, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, I'm sorry, Meta, Google, everything, again, down between 20 and 57%. And that was just on the high end of the range. We had companies like Peloton, DocuSign, Zoom. They were down major, major, major numbers in 2022. I've never seen a liquidation in the tech industry ever like that, except in, you know, 2001 to 2003, say. And so what do we have happening here? We have the market now rebounding and rebalancing, trying to find some kind of equilibrium now in 2023. You know, we have cryptocurrencies doing really well with, you know, Bitcoin up 38-39%, Decentraland up 153%, Fetch, which is a cryptocurrency, up 189%. We have Solana, which everybody thought was going to zero because of the FTX event. That's up 140% already in 2023. And again, Audius, Celsius Network. I mean, I could go through 200 cryptocurrencies and tell you that there's of 230 I'm looking at, only about four are down year to date. And I know it's only been a month, right? A month doesn't make a trend, but I'm very excited about what I see in terms of the technology side, and especially of crypto rebalancing and, again, finding balance that was maybe taken away from 2022. And I don't mean this just for crypto. I mean this for the bond market as well. U.S. Treasury 30-year yield index dropped 7.92% in 2023 just this month. The 30-year is down 7.92. The 10-year is down 8.46%. Natural gas, you know, down 40% year to date, 1 month. So I don't know, Andy. I just think we're going to see balance again in 2023. This goes across every single asset class you and I have ever talked about.
Things have switched over in a really big way, and you cited that. We went from, like, the punch bowl and easy money and, you know, super low interest rates, historically low interest rates, to more of a normalcy. And then you're always going to have market disruption when you're making that move. So I guess the most important thing is what's next, and what do you see, and how are you playing it?
Well, what I see happening are a couple of really interesting things. And one is I see emerging markets for the first time since 2010 begin to exert its authority over our U.S. domestic market. I find that really, really interesting. I also see consumer staples, you know, the food, you know, automobiles, washer and dryer, the durables that we think that we need, and we do need, right, on a monthly basis, where the consumer discretionary was down 40%, I think, from peak to trough. So I'm beginning to see a little bit of money move into the discretionary side, away from the consumer staple side. So away from defense to offense, from risk off to risk on. That's what I see.
Is this the start of something really brewing? I mean, do we just then take off from here versus doing a retest or experiencing some sort of downside?
I don't think we're going to retest our lows. I think the lows were kind of put in from June to October. I think maybe the October sell-off could have been the retest. But again, you know, you don't really know. We're kind of guessing here. But again, take a look at a point and figure chart or a long-term chart, and you could make a case that what we saw happen in the summer of 2022, we put in a low in the S&P 500 around 3620. We rallied to 4300, sold off and made a new low to like 34 and change, 35 and change in the fall, rallied back up to recently, you know, 4100, sold off to 3800. Now we're back up testing the 4100, 4120. So it kind of looks like a head and shoulders bottom in 2022. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that's what it looks like. And on one hand, I love looking at charts, but I also have to respect, you know, 101 other indicators and things that I see. You like the Dow theory, I mean, and I appreciate that.
In fact, we'll talk about the Dow theory, amongst other things, when we get back. We got to take a quick break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We'll be back with Bill Ulivieri right after the break. Back with Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. And be sure to check out the website, senecalcapital.com. That's senacalecapital.com. Right as we were heading into break, Bill, you had mentioned the Dow theory. You know, I've talked about this a number of times on the Gains podcast. I'm a big believer in the Dow theory, and my play right now is I'm dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin and Ethereum. Have been doing that at these lower levels. So impressed with Meta and VR and AR technology. Love Meta long term. I'm also dollar cost averaging into Meta right now as we speak. I've been doing that the last couple of months. Still got a ton of dry powder. And, you know, you talked about the Dow theory. It is still bearish, though we're getting pretty close to maybe having it turn to the bullish camp. And that's what I'm waiting for is before I start really deploying any more capital is to wait and see what the Dow theory says, if it gives us the all clear sign or if it goes and retests those lows. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. What is your play right now? I mean, are you in here buying? I guess that's the big question. And if you are, what are you buying right now?
Well, for our clients, and again, we have basically three bins that we manage assets for. We have people that are interested in only dividend income strategy. These are retired people looking for a yield of between 4.5% and 7.5%, and they would like a little bit of a growth component. Then we have those investors that are, they're virtually all in, like on a scale of 1 to 10, they're invested at a 7 or 8 in terms of risk, in terms of aggressiveness. Then we have those clients that are more middle of the road. They're kind of like a 60-40 portfolio or 65-35. Every single client has a little bit, you know, 3 or 4% of Bitcoin via some of the exchange traded funds and closed-end funds that are available. But having said that, Andy, I have to respect this 12-year signal of emerging markets versus our markets. And I'm concerned about that because, you know, you may remember, maybe when we first met, you know, 10, 11 years ago, that we were just wrapping up something called the lost decade. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ really didn't go anywhere from roughly 1996 to 1998 to like 2010. It was actually the lost decade was more like 14 years rather than 10 years. And go ahead, take a look at a long-term chart of the S&P. And the S&P was pretty much unchanged up and down, you know, plus or minus 7 to 10% over 14 years. But then emerging markets was up like 280%. When the QQQ turned positive with respect to emerging markets from 2010 until, say, 2022, 12 years, the Qs were up 450%. Emerging markets over the course of 12 years was like down 4%. So that's really interesting. That's a profound rate of return difference over the course of, you know, 1998 until 2022. I mean, it's a massive shift in where money is placed. So I have to be aware of that. I'm slowly on the rallies of the Qs, going to be selling some of the QQQ and buying emerging markets, right? And we're doing that through, and there's only a handful of emerging market ETFs, and one of them is EEM. I mean, it's one of the main staples. And, you know, I generally don't like to mention stock symbols per se, because there are different ways of playing country ETFs. But the emerging markets ETF that's offered by iShares, symbol EEM, I think looks interesting. And again, very sidewaysy, is trading the same place now as it was in 2012, 2013. So now the question I have to ask myself, Andy, is will EEM stay in a trading range between, say, 53 and 54 and to the high side and to the downside 32? Or is this the year after 12 years it breaks out and just takes off, right? So
what kind of exposure? That's sure. The ticker EEM, Edward, yeah. Edward Mary. That's the iShares MSCI Emerging Markets ETF. What kind of exposure is in that particular ETF? I mean, like you said, there's a bunch of vehicles that give you exposure into a variety of areas. What kind of exposure are you getting through that EEM ETF?
Well, that's a great question, Andy. So primarily the EEM is still like 27.5% technology, 17% financials, 16% consumer cyclicals, 8 to 9% of basic materials compared to, say, QQQ, right? But the makeup is 23.5% Hong Kong, 16.97% Taiwan, 13% South Korea, 12.5% India, 4% Brazil, 4% China, 3% South Africa, 3% Asia Pacific, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Poland, Philippines, Chile, Greece, like everything that's not U.S.
So and you really so do I, get a lot of true emerging market exposure there. Looks yes. like it does tilt a little bit to the Asia side.
So, you know, you and I were, again, we're long been in this business long enough to remember PIGS, Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain. We remember BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China. Like, we always have these little four-letter symbols, and I don't think one has emerged yet recently for this shift. But I do find it interesting that, again, we have what could be a profound shift in where asset managers put money, because maybe there's something more to the U.S. economy that you and I are missing. Like, maybe technology ran its course and that incredible rally during the pandemic to the pin popping the bubble. And we saw, again, carnage all over technology of biblical proportions. Maybe now it's just time where people are like, okay, let's go to emerging markets. That seems to be where we need to put assets.
Talk about how tech has been decimated. You also now, you're seeing the follow through with, I mean, a ton of companies have been laying workers off as well. And that's part of them working through this process. I'm with you. Maybe it's just the shift of, you know, there's really true value in emerging markets. Let's, for the time being, put our capital there.
Well, you know, I know that the last shoe to drop by the Federal Reserve is that, like, all the raw materials, all the commodity inflation index things are down huge. But one thing that's not down huge is labor. And what is technology's biggest expense? It's labor.
Labor, right? Exactly.
It's not brick and mortar. It's not office building. It's not real estate investment trust. It's not property. It's labor. And so the question I have to ask myself is, where are companies going to go to get cheap labor, at least for the time being?
Oh, that's a great point. India, Brazil. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I'm just saying maybe we don't know why. I just know what is. Like, I don't care what the why is. I just know what is. And I cannot ignore this trading signal of, again, 10, 12-year proportion, where emerging market is beginning to look stronger than U.S. And I find that really interesting. And I have to. And again, I'm not saying I'm selling all my client assets and moving in emerging markets. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this is a tactical shift of where we are not going to be just blindly rebalancing the QQQ and S&P 500. We have to take consumer discretionary in this space in place. We have to look at maybe some high yield corporate. We have to look at, again, at emerging markets. So it's not as Cartesian as I would like it. It seems to be a little bit more like a buffet where you have to pick and choose the things that you like in an otherwise quote unquote non-standard portfolio. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. But you still have to be. I mean, you're actually managing people's money, and they rely on you. Unlike a degenerate like myself, you know, I have the safe portfolio. But the stuff that we talk about on the Gains podcast is those degenerate trades that we get in on.
When I look at how my belief system, right, and compared to other advisors, I still talk to many advisors that think owning Bitcoin is completely ridiculous, right? And you and I kind of see a different value proposition in terms of the technology of Bitcoin and blockchain. So there's always a 3 or 4% position in that for my clients. In terms of degenerate, listen, just because I run an investment advisory firm, I've got clients that are retired and elderly, and I have people that are young and trying to grow a portfolio. And of my entire book of business, about 4% are degenerates like us. They say,
God love them.
If you see anything out there, let me know what you, and I'll make a decision, right? So I advise them without charge on their assets held outside of my limited discretionary authority. And they trust me to make decisions for their own portfolio, whether it's a dividend paying stock, it's a gas utility, electric utility, or I'll say, hey, did you see these cryptocurrencies this week? Do you see that they're all up 38%? And we have a great conversation because we philosophically resonate with each other. We both see what blockchain is. We both see and follow the headlines for PayPal, MasterCard, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, Fidelity. We're all watching what's going on, and we get it, right? At least I believe that we get it. This is not going away. And to be able to monetize that, I mean, if there's ever an asset class that's been beaten down, it's like the MicroStrategies and Signature, Silvergate Bank, right? The ones that were involved in the cryptocurrency world. Like, these things are down huge, and it's just a conversation. My clients can do whatever they want with their assets. They can hire me, they can fire me, they can do whatever they want. But I'm saying, you know, Silvergate Bank trading $14 a share, the high was like 200 and change. Like, during, what am I talking about? It's almost $300 a share during COVID. $240 a share peak, now it's trading 14, right? That's a bank stock that's down massively. Have I included that into the portfolio? No, not yet. But I'm looking at it because, again, here is Silvergate Capital has, I would call it blockchain friendly, and let's just see how it goes. Even Signature Bank had, I think, a friendly attitude. Let me, I have to pull that one up again. Signature Bank. I think they were friendly to cryptocurrency. That was symbol SBNY. Let's take a look at how that thing is doing. How's their performance? So their high, I'm looking at it right now, so just give me a second. Their high was $372 a share during the pandemic. Now it's trading $128. So that, again, is another banking stock that yields 2.2%, down massively from the highs in 2020, 2021. Down 25% this year.
You said since the beginning of this year, 2023.
Since the beginning of this year, yeah. I mean, Citigroup is down. Right? Let's throw this into the bin of, and I can do that in like 5 minutes. But Silvergate's down 88% from its high. Well, what does that mean? I'm not sure. Was it too much exposure to crypto? Was it exposure to FTX? Did they lend? Did they use it as collateral? I'm not sure yet, Andy. I'm just saying there are little pockets of speculative places degenerates can go. And there's not that much else out there when I look at all my sectors, my 40 S&P sectors. So
it is a totally different animal, though. In fact, I was chatting with somebody in the hall today in the station, somebody else who, one of our engineers who actually trades and made money on crypto and stocks. He's actually quite good at it. And we were just talking about how, boy, a year and a half ago, we were just on our phones constantly, even throughout the day, just watching all the activity. It is a completely different animal. People were actively trading a lot more a year and a half ago. They've kind of lost interest because obviously they've gotten taken to the shed. It's just, you know, it's not, you know, you don't see the activity, quite the hype that was there before. And usually when a lot of people lose interest and turn away, that's when you should go in and start picking the bones on the bottom.
Sure. Well, you know, it's easier said than done, right?
Yeah, right.
Andy, all right. But again, you know, investing is both fundamental, you know, looking at numbers, PE ratios. It's technical. Let's take a look at some charts. Let's see if we're breaching or breaking, you know, previous lows or previous highs. And it's all wrapped that up into an emotional behavior, right? So when emotions run high and are peaking, you know, you have to let a couple of chips off the table. When emotions look horrible and there's blood in the streets, as they like to say, then maybe it's time to, you know, add a few percentage points to the bottom line.
Well, they say, when there's blood in the streets, that's when you actually buy, even if it's your own blood.
Even if it's your own blood. And again, it's so much easier to say than when you're actually living through it. But again, I was lived through the crash of 87, mini crash of 89. And we can talk about every crisis that happens every 2 years in the market. So I don't mean to be flippant. I'm just saying that I think I see it now for what it is. And it's way easier for me to buy the lower, you know, I buy the sell-off and the declines, and it's easier for me to sell the rallies. It's still not that easy for my clients to have the conversation with me, but they trust me enough as any client does with their advisor. It could be me or it could be the other 25,000 investment advisors out there. You are trusting them to look at data, to make a decision, to pick a spot, and to execute. My clients pay me to execute, right? Because they're afraid to do it themselves. And it's okay. It's all good, right? I'm not disparaging them. I'm just saying that's the relationship that we have with our clients.
Well, it's about being a psychologist as much as anything.
You're absolutely right. So again, I look at hundreds maybe 150, 200, 150 different asset classes, emerging markets, precious metals, basic material, equal weighted assets, you know, cap weighted. And it's just, this is the creative, enjoyable part of the business. This is the part that I love, right? Looking at overbought, oversold figures. This is what we signed up for, right? And we have to do the best that we can. And as they like to say, as FINRA requires all investment advisors to state, and that is, you know, past performance, you know, future performance is no indication of, I'm really messing that up. Past performance is no indication of future return, no guarantee of future return. And we know that, right? We know how crazy and narcissistic the market is, how unreliable and what an incredible mate that we have chosen to be with, right, in this business. But we wouldn't change it for anything in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And so now the idea is to watch Japan, watch China, watch emerging markets, watch Asia, watch Africa, watch South America, and just see how this puzzle is going to reveal itself.
Great conversation today. And we've talked emerging markets look attractive. It looks like crypto is starting to turn around. What's your takeaway today from our conversation, Bill?
So being an investment advisor, being a successful investor or speculator, you have to have enough humility to say, you know what? I don't know. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad advisor. It doesn't mean you're a bad investor. It doesn't mean you're a bad speculator. It just means that not everybody knows everything. And we all have financial news feeds. We're looking at LinkedIn, Bloomberg, a dozen more news feeds. And the truth is there's people speak with great certainty, but nobody really knows 100% for sure. And we do the best we can. We stay diversified. We stay safe. So listen, I guess my takeaway, the short story is, it's okay not to know. You know, you don't bet the whole ranch on one asset class. Stay diversified, live to fight another day. And if you're right, then the returns are and the rewards are just amazing. And it doesn't take much, you know, a little bit of to value, a little bit to growth, a little bit to natural gas. Like, you know, just diversify and put your portfolio together the way you see it and put on the trade, manage the risk. That's all I can really say.
Oh, I love that. And just recap that again. Put on the trade, manage the risk. You often say that.
There's paralysis by analysis. And it was one of the biggest issues on the trading floor where guys could not open up their mouth and make a trade. They were too scared to trade because they were afraid they were going to lose money. And I would tell them, just do one. Buy one option. Sell one option. Do one of something, right? And release the vocal cords. Get out there and do it, right? Put on a trade. Manage the risk. And that was taught to me by my mentors and the people that backed me in the 80s. And it was so true because anytime I hurt my own portfolio is because I got cocky and I didn't manage the risk. And it took me a long time to learn that lesson, but it's a lesson that stays with me today. Put on the trade, manage the risk.
And that's time-tested advice from Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. And be sure to check out the website, senecalcapital.com. That's C-E-N-A-C-L-E, capital.com. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We are back next Wednesday morning, and I look forward to seeing you then.
On News Radio, WBB.